You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
The Rangers are preparing to head to spring training, where pitchers and catchers are reporting very soon, and they're also in the midst of celebrating a Hall of Famer, so all kinds of fun stuff going on with them. Let's talk to T.R. Sullivan about all of that. I'm Allison Futter. T.R., the Mike Napoli saga, I don't know if you want to call it a saga, but it continues, and I guess, I mean, J.D. kind of alluded to the fact that there's still room to make a deal, even though he's not identifying anybody specifically, but do you think there's still interest in Napoli, and do you think that they would go more than 1 year? It seems like that might be a sticking point. Would they be willing to extend it beyond a one-year deal?
Yeah, listen, I think that if they were offering more than a one-year deal, it would be done by now. So I really believe, if what I'm hearing, although not from anybody in authority, that it's all, the Rangers are only willing to go 1 year. I don't see the harm in going 2 years for a guy who's a first baseman, a designated hitter, tremendous offensive player, really what this team needs. But right now that seems to be the biggest hang-up. Otherwise, I think this would get done. And, you know, I don't even know if you would call it a saga, because a saga suggests there's a lot of events and turns and twists and plot twists and all that. It's been real quiet since, you know, we first started writing about it in December, that it looked like it was going to happen. And at the time, everybody seemed to be really optimistic that it was going to get done, but it's just kind of flattened out. You know, last week the Rangers signed James Loney and to a minor league contract. I'm just wondering if that's a little bit of a pressure ploy on the Rangers' part, to put a little pressure on Napoli to, like, hey, you know, we got somebody. If you don't want to come aboard, we got this guy, which I don't know if that'll work, because Mike Napoli is what the Rangers need, a right-handed power-hitting first base DH. I think he still knows that. I think he knows how much the Rangers need him, so it might be a little bit of a standoff right now.
Yeah, it's an interesting standoff because, like you said, Napoli knows that the Rangers really need him. At the same time, Napoli's got to be sitting there a little shaking in his boots a little bit, just because it is, as we're recording this, January 26th. I mean, it's getting down to crunch time, and for a player of his caliber to still not know where he's playing has to be stressful on his side, too. And it's sort of like, who's going to blink first, maybe?
Yeah, well, you know, if you go back to the old law of supply and demand, you know, you look at the offseason, you know, the pitching went quickly, and, you know, and some other positions went quickly. Well, you know, the first base DH area, you know, you still got guys out there. Chris Carter's still out there. You know, Ryan Howard, Justin Morneau, Adam Lind. You know, I know Valbuena signed this week, but I think Pedro Alvarez is still out there, too. So there's still a lot of guys out there. So I think that there's a lot more supply than there is demand. And I think the Rangers are kind of using that as a part of their negotiating ploy. And, you know, they keep saying, every time we ask John Daniels about it, he's very coy. He says, you know, if it's the right fit, financially, we'll do it, but otherwise, we're very content to go with the guys we've been. And, you know, right now, obviously, they got six guys. You start with Josh Hamilton and James Loney, and, you know, you got to look at Ryan Rua, Jerickson Profar, Joey Gallo, and the young rookie Ronald Guzman. Any one of those six guys could play first base. I mean, that's it from inside, unless they bring Mike Young out of retirement. But, you know, that's a lot of competition right there in itself.
Absolutely. Okay, so moving off the field a little bit, the Rangers, I don't want to say it was a surprise, but Pudge Rodriguez being elected to the Hall of Fame on his first ballot, on his first try, was very exciting. I did not think this was going to happen, only because the way that things trend, the public ballot, sort of when you're tallying all the ballots that have been made public leading up to the announcement, he was at over the 75% threshold, but not that much. And there's always usually like a 5% drop-off. And Pudge actually, I think, increased a percentage point. Did this surprised you at all that he got in on the first ballot?
Well, you know, I know the track you're talking about, Ryan Thibodeau does it, a young kid out of Oakland. Everybody follows it, love it. It's kind of like the presidential polls, and there's a plus margin for error. But, you know, the sometimes, like last year, I think Hoffman went up after the ballots came out. You know, Pudge dropped a little bit, like 3 points at the end. You know, this guy's the first ballot Hall of Famer. Everybody knows he's one of the greatest catchers of all time. Tremendous defensive player, 14-time All-Star, 13 gold gloves, on and on and on. I talked to him about being in the top five: Johnny Bench, Josh Gibson, Yogi Berra, and Roy Campanella and Pudge. Those are my top five. You know, there's always the performance-enhancing part of it, and the Jose Canseco book, and the innuendo, and, you know, a lot of guys had gone through it. Dotson went through it. Bagwell obviously did. Who knows why some other guys have fallen so far off or had to wait so long, but it's just part of the whole Hall of Fame process here. In the past 5-6 years, we've seen, Allison, that some guys, you know, are going to have to wait just to fight their way through the muck and the mud. But Pites got in on the first ballot, 76%, not overwhelming like Ken Griffey Jr., but to me, he's a definite Hall of Famer. He's definitely one of the top five all time. I think it's great that the Rangers are finally retiring his uniform number.
Yeah, that brought me to my next question. So they're not wasting any time with that. They're going to retire this year. Some teams have different philosophies on when they do that. A lot of teams do it the year that they do get in the Hall of Fame. The Astros did not with Bagwell and Biggio. They did it soon after they retired. So that's pretty cool because while there are a lot of players in the Hall of Fame who played for the Rangers, as far as somebody who was signed originally by the Rangers and made his debut, I mean, Pudge is in a class all his own. So that's pretty cool that they're not waiting around and they're just going to do it this season.
Yeah, I think the Rangers have kind of had high standards about the retiring numbers, and you know they do have their Rangers Hall of Fame, and that's a little more liberal among who they induct, and the guys they induct are worthy. They're just not on the same level as, you know, guys are going to Cooperstown. And the Rangers have only retired 3 uniform numbers, Jackie Robinson being one of them. That's universal. Nolan Ryan, who's obvious, and Johnny Oates, who's so revered here, even though he's not in the Hall of Fame, he's definitely, you know, held in high esteem by all Rangers fans. So, you know, they waited on Pudge, you know, and it's definitely an honor. I think it's overdue, but he definitely deserves it.
Yeah, absolutely, and just a great guy. It was nice to see him so moved by the whole thing. He's been so gracious and, you know, hasn't been trying to hide that he's very caught up in this and a little overwhelmed by everything. So that's pretty cool, too, to see a good person, a good representative.
Yeah, he's really excited about this. I mean, and all Hall of Famers are. I mean, it's obviously when you get to the Hall of Fame, it's a huge honor for everybody. But Pudge is so unabashed about the whole thing. He wanted it. He wanted it bad. He made no secret about it. And he's really enjoying it. He's eating it up. He got to be introduced at the Maverick game, and now he's kind of doing a victory lap around his homeland of Puerto Rico. So he's having a great time with it. But, you know, anybody who saw him, I know he had him in Houston for just a short time, but anybody who watched Pudge Rodriguez over that 21-year career know this guy deserves every accolade he's getting right now.
Yeah, absolutely, and great guy. Okay, good times. TR, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next time.
Okay, thank you, Allison.
The Oakland A's are preparing to head to spring training soon, and they are shoring up their roster as we speak. Let's talk to Jane Lee about that. I'm Allison Footer. Jane, so the A's had a recent signing, infielder Adam Rosales, to a 1-year contract. He's had a nice little major league career, 33 years old. So what does he bring to the A's table this year?
He brings a lot of familiarity. And this is someone the A's acquired from the Reds several years ago, had him, you know, up and down over the course of about 3 years. And then that crazy thing happened where he was claimed off waivers by the Rangers, then claimed back by the A's, then went back to the Rangers, eventually went to the Padres last year. Now he's back with the A's. So they know him very
well.
Wow. Yeah, not normal. But this is someone that they know very well, really like his versatility. Obviously, that's something that they value very highly in the organization, a lot of platoon guys. And I think this just gives Bob Melvin another, strong defensive option, and with the ability to kind of match him up when he's playing that matchup game. I'd assume if the roster stays as is, that Rosales would be the primary backup for third, second, and shortstop. So I think, you know, what you've seen the A's do this offseason, bringing in several veteran guys, I don't know that they're necessarily halting this youth movement that they started last year, but they do want to bring in reinforcements, guys that are proven and experienced and kind of help just, you know, with the young guys in the clubhouse, all very good clubhouse guys, not just Rosales, but Rajay Davis, Matt Joyce, Trevor Plouffe, you know, guys that can not only provide a good clubhouse presence with it, which they've been missing over the last couple of years, but also kind of shore things up and provide a little flexibility to the roster.
Yeah, I think we have gone over the fact that they do need more of a clubhouse presence. And even though Rosales is actually like kind of a quiet, laid-back guy, I don't see him really like taking on the role of like being that like really vocal leader. But But at the same time, it does. That's kind of what the A's need to be doing right now, right? Is like taking advantage of like really solid major league players that aren't stars that can do a lot of things, and just making sure that there's like a almost like a pipeline of that type of player that's as strong as like a pipeline of young players that they're trying to infuse, just to piece things together right now until, like you said, some of these actual emerging stars kind of get their feet under them.
Exactly. And I mean, when you have guys like this around, you know, the young guys are watching these other guys, and you want to talk about, I mean, a commitment to hustle. I mean, I think it's pretty well known around the league. Rosales is, you know, home run trot.
Right.
And it's just, he brings a ton of energy. And I think that makes a big difference in a young clubhouse. And also, the A's don't have to, you know, rush these guys, rush their development. They can kind of bring them along slowly because this is just one of those years where they're probably not going to be contending, especially you look around the division and what everyone else has done. The A's are still definitely lagging, but there is potential on their roster. It's just, you know, developing that talent. And, you know, during a time like that, you want some veteran guys around to help that process.
Yeah, actually, Andy Green, who is now the Padres manager, but he told a funny story. He and Adam Rosales were actually roommates, maybe in the minor league, but Andy was toward the end of his, you know, very nondescript career. him, but he was near the end, and Adam was an up-and-coming, I think this was the Reds organization, and Adam was coming through their system, and Andy told the clubhouse guy, I want you to room me with the cleanest living player that we have on this team, with the most basic, non-controversial, cleanest living guy that there is, and he got paired with Adam Rosales. So, you know, I guess that gives you a little indication what kind of guy that Adam is. I would have taken that as a very high compliment. Okay, so let's move on to something totally different, and that is that the A's kind of marketing strategy this year, so they have made a series of commercials for the 2017 season that are Oakland-centric, so they're really focusing on the city. They are out in the local community. This seems to be kind of a calculated, I don't know if gamble is the word, but definitely sort of getting themselves really identified with the actual city of Oakland. What can you tell us about the thinking behind that, the strategy?
Yeah, I really don't think it's a coincidence that this is the year that they're shifting the scene in their commercials to Oakland. In years past, they've done most of them in Arizona. And I mean, their commercials are always great. I think they've won several awards over the last few years, but this year, you know, they're making an effort to, I think, do all of them in the local community. They've scouted out several locations that they're shooting at, over the next few days. They've got a bunch of players in town for FanFest this weekend. So they're taking that time to, you know, get everything done. And the mayor of Oakland is even in one commercial with Bob Melvin, which I think it's great that they're involving people like that and just involving, you know, the community and shooting at several sites around Oakland. I don't think it's any secret that they are trying to make a concerted effort to show their loyalty to the city. This is obviously where they want to build a new stadium. And I think it's become even more important. You know, you see the Warriors are almost out the door, about to move to San Francisco. It seems likely that the Raiders might be on the move to Vegas. And, you know, all that would be left would be the A's in Oakland. And this is definitely where they want to be. And I think they're doing, you know, everything they can to really showcase that loyalty and really just kind of put it out there that they are committed to staying here. And I think this is one of several good moves that they've done and are going to be continuing to do.
That is a bummer when you put it that way with the other sports teams. I mean, Oakland is
right.
It's really fascinating because Oakland as a city is rising. It's definitely become a destination place for people to live. It's really grown so much and developed so much over time. And it seems like the sports thing is moving backwards. That's got to be frustrating for the people that live there.
It is, and I think especially, I mean, you look at a team like the Warriors, you know, the success they've had here of late, you know, I think that they're fan base, so it's always been pretty good. I mean, it's clearly as strong as ever right now. And so I think, you know, even though they're not going too far, I mean, it's very different. You know, you look at where the A's and the Giants are, there's clearly two separate sides of the bay. Very few people align themselves with both teams. It's just, it is separate, you know. There's San Francisco and then there's the East Bay. And I think Oakland fans take a lot of pride in their sports teams. And I know that there's a lot of disappointment with the Warriors moving and, you know, of course, the Raiders, too. I mean, they haven't had the type of success the Warriors have, but their fan base, you know, it's almost comparable to the A's, to where good times and bad, I mean, their fan base is so loyal and so passionate and dedicated. So to see two out of the three teams, you know, almost out the door, you know, it is sad. And I know that from the A's standpoint, having the Raiders move, potentially move, I should say, it does help their case. It would be a lot easier for them to build their case for a stadium in Oakland when there's only one team to worry about rather than two. But at the same time, you know, you look at Oakland and how much it's growing and building and how many people are flocking to it. It really is sad that one of the, you know, best sports scenes in the country, you know, is about to diminish to one team.
Yeah, that is amazing. That's really unfortunate. Okay, so I'm going to move on to a happier note. We're going to end on the recent assignment that all 30 MLB.com reporters had was to figure out and to write about the best free agent signing in the team's history of which they cover. So Dave Henderson, it was your choice. I'm not as familiar with the A's history as you are. So was this a decision-making process, or was this, like, completely obvious?
You know, it was fairly easy, only because with the A's, there's only so many options when it comes to free agent guys.
True.
They don't go out and, you know, bring in a lot of big-name free agents just because they haven't had the means to. So, you know, you look at not just over the last decade, but maybe two decades, it really was slim pickings. I mean, you look at recently, the biggest names, per se, that they signed out of free agency, you could start with Billy Butler, and we can all agree that didn't go as planned. And I just kept going back and back and back, and it really did take a while, but it did seem like Dave Henderson was just a good choice. I mean, I think his impact was immediate, and I don't know that it can be overstated what he meant, not only to the team at the time, going to four straight World Series and, you know, winning one, but what he meant to the fan base. I think he is one of those few players in the history of the organization where you can say really, truly connected with the fans and just that, you know, unique, special way. So I think his impact, you know, both on and off the field, you know, after signing with them as a free agent, it really kind of trumped any others that came after.
Absolutely. Okay, interesting. Jane, thank you so much. We'll catch up with you next week.
All right, sounds good. Thank you.
The Astros have had quite an eventful week and are looking forward to having a few more eventful times as pitchers and catchers get ready to report to spring training. Let's talk to Brian McTaggart about all that. I'm Allison Sutter. Tags, let's start off with spring training, which is always a fun time for everyone, but even more fun now because the Astros have a sparkling new facility to report to, and A.J. Hinch is there right now. You talked to him about what A.J. actually tweeted out a pretty sweet video of the field. Looks really nice. So how excited is A.J. about this new place?
Yeah, he's really excited. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a big upgrade from what they had in Kissimmee. Just one of the reasons is just space. I mean, you know, in Kissimmee, A.J. had a copy machine right outside his door. I mean, it was a very functional facility, and, you know, it was fine, and, you know, the location wasn't the greatest. But, you know, now the clubhouse is, I think he said it's probably as big as the Minute Maid Park clubhouse. The weight room is massive. There's, you know, a big cafeteria. There's a couple of different press areas. And they have an agility field with turf, you know, which they didn't have before. And, you know, everything is just built to make everything streamlined a lot better. So, you know, he went down there with a couple other people with the Astros and walked around and saw his office. And, you know, a lot of people had different input on what should go where. And, you know, stuff is still going to be getting built when they get down there. And, you know, AJ admitted there's probably some things they need to change around for next year now that he's kind of eyeballed it a little bit. But just overall, it should be great not only getting into the facility and what it looks like, but also getting there. There's a lot of hotels right next to it. And even if you're, you know, a couple exits up the interstate, you're still, you know, 10 minutes away. And that was a problem in Kissimmee, as you know, Allison, was just if you wanted to stay somewhere nice, you had to stay 10 miles away. And battle Disney traffic. It took 30 minutes to get there, and that was, I think, really the biggest issue. The facility itself was fine. It was just the location. So now they're going to have location, and they're going to have a state-of-the-art facility all the way around.
Yeah, it sounds like everybody's pretty pleased with it, and it's just a brilliant notion that teams would share a facility, share the land, and then have their own areas, and then be able to play some of their quote-unquote road games at home. So it should be fun sharing that with the Nationals. So the other thing I just wanted to talk to you about quickly is the fact that the Astros obviously have a new Hall of Famer in Jeff Bagwell, and it's been a whirlwind for him, and Craig Biggio kind of prepared him for that a little bit. Once you get that call that you've been elected to the Hall of Fame, it's a crazy time. So you fly up to New York and you do a formal press conference for the Hall of Fame, and then you kind of get whisked over here and there, and then he comes home and the Astros have a big pep rally for him where the fans packed into Union Station and to cheer him. That was pretty cool. You and I were both there, and the Astros, this is one of their strengths. They're very good at putting these things on. That was a pretty neat event for everyone.
Yeah, it was cool, and I could have listened to those stories all day. I mean, they had Berkman come on stage. They had Osmus come on the stage and Garner, and, they were telling stories of the, 04 and 05 teams. And all stories we've heard before, but, to hear them again and fans all gathered around laughing. And, that's what it's all about, is having fun. And, they really did a nice job. And, Jeff, I think Jeff was just overwhelmed for a few days. But, now he's got a time to decompress. I know he gets this big notebook from the Hall of Fame with all the stuff he's got to do and, make that speech. But, he's got 5 or 6 months, and so he's going to get to dial it down a little bit and become a normal guy. But, it should be a fun weekend up there in Cooperstown with him being inducted again, just based on the number of fans that came to the rally and former players that are showing up. I don't know if there'll be as many Astros fans as there were with Craig, just because he was the first, and everyone had to be there for the first Astro. But I think there's going to be a lot of orange in Cooperstown on July 29th, and deservedly so for Jeff. But hopefully now he can sit back and enjoy it a little bit. It just kind of blows me away that, here he was telling the story that he was getting on his roof to help his dad adjust the antenna to, watch Red Sox games. And he loved Carl Yastrzemski, and now Carl Yastrzemski is in the Hall of Fame, and Jeff is joining him. I mean, that's just mind-blowing stuff. That is just wild. And Jeff said he's trying to lobby Yastrzemski to come to his induction. I'm not sure how he's doing that, but apparently Carl Yastrzemski doesn't come to Cooperstown much. So it'd be great if that could happen. But even now, there's going to be a few dozen Hall of Famers sitting behind him, Biggio included.
Yeah. It's I think what Yastrzemski was just there for other Red Sox that have gotten in, but he doesn't go there. It would be huge for Jeff, but also for his dad, if they could get him to come to that. And I, like you said, yes, there probably won't be as many Astros fans there, but I am anticipating that the amount of former teammates and managers, coaches, friends are going to flock to Cooperstown for Jeff. I think that what I've been trying to sort of communicate beyond Bagwell as a player is him as a person, and I've never met anybody that has been more well-liked, loved by everybody who knows him. He just has this way about him that is so, I guess, real and down to earth, and I don't think he ever had an enemy in the game and so many friends, and I would think that there's going to be a huge turnout of people that don't have managerial and coaching commitments to other major league teams. I would think that they're probably going to go up to Cooperstown.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. I mean, we've seen nothing against Craig, but, a couple of the former teammates, who we didn't see a whole lot a couple of years ago are already, Lance has been a little more visible when it comes to Jeff getting inducted and so forth. And there's probably going to be others, but you're right. He was just such a well-respected member of that clubhouse that I think there will be a lot of his former teammates going up there. Induction day falls when the Astros are playing the Tigers, and too bad Osmus can't be at either one of these, Craig's or Jeff's induction, because he's managing, and, for him, hopefully he's still managing on July 29th. But I imagine guys like Moises Alou and, I don't know if Berkman's going to make it up there, but, Phil Garner, I'd imagine, is going. And there might be some other ones, too. Bill Spires came to Biggio as well. So definitely, if not the greatest Astro of all time, he's probably the most beloved Astro of all time right there with Nolan Ryan, I would imagine, and Biggio. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of orange. And, know, there's five people getting inducted that weekend. You know, three players, and then don't forget the commissioner and John Schierholz. So, yeah, I don't know how many Braves fans are, you know, Braves have had a few guys go in now, and Chipper Jones is coming up. So I don't expect a lot of Braves fans. And, you know, I'm not sure how many, you know, fans that the commissioner is going to pull up there. So, you know, Pudge, I think, will draw a big crowd. And Tim Raines played for the Expos. So, and it's not far from Montreal. So I'm sure there'll be a good Expos representation as well. So it should be fun on that weekend, just to see the how diverse the crowd is and what teams are getting supported.
Yeah, but between Pudge and Bagwell, I think this is going to be a Texas takeover, which I would imagine people like you are pretty excited about, Tags.
Yeah, you know, that was a fun weekend, and you know, to go back a couple of years later, you know, I'm pretty excited about it. It was just everything about the weekend, the parade and the induction. It was, you know, it was just really cool, and I know we were there together and with Richard and some of our other colleagues, and just a lot of fun, and I'm you know, I'm excited about it, and you know, happy for Jeff that he finally got it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was probably one of the top five experiences of my lifetime, just from probably a working standpoint, maybe of all time. That was like the perfect weekend. So hopefully we're going to have another one. Okay, Tag, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Talk to you next time. The Angels had a pretty nice free agent signing, and it really does strengthen their offense. At least that's what it looks like from the outset. So let's talk to Richard Justice about that on Allison's Twitter. Richard, Luis Valbuena, who you and I are very familiar with because he played in Houston most recently, signs a two-year deal worth $15 million. I like this signing. He was very injured last year and had a season-ending injury that was pretty severe, but he had a really productive year up until then, and I kind of like the signing. Do you?
Yeah, and you know, it's potentially a three-year deal, and you don't give a guy, he's going to make $6.5 million this year, $8 million 2018, and then there's whatever you call it, option after that, that's $8.5 million. But you don't give a guy that kind of money for him to sit on the bench. So he's going to be their opening day first baseman, I would guess. You know, and like you said, you and I saw him play every day. He is a good third baseman, and he is a better first baseman, and is happy to play either one. And you know what I always heard, I'm sure you did too, he's kind of a leader. He's the kind of a guy that kind of settles everything down in the clubhouse. But anyway, he's 31 years old. He had an 816 OPS last year, and he's a lefty hitter in a righty-dominated lineup. I don't think it means that C.J. Crone is going to be traded immediately, or I don't even think it means that Albert Pujols is there's some bad news. Billy Epler specifically said there wasn't. I think what he said was he could platoon with Crone, but both Crone and Pujols are coming off surgeries, and this gives them a backup. You know, the bottom line is, when you got a chance to get Luis Valbuena for $6.5 million, you know he can help you at so many spots, and especially with Yunel Escobar, the regular third baseman in his walk here. It was just one of those deals that makes sense. But he goes in right now as the first baseman, but there's the freedom that they know he can do other things. And, you know, I don't know if the Astros are putting him in the outfield, but I know they talk to him about the outfield. So it's a very valuable commodity to have.
Yeah, this is what teams are supposed to be doing, and I've always railed on this. So, you know, Pujols could be questionable for opening day. I mean, we don't know how this is going to shake out, you know, with platoon situations and coming off surgeries and Crohn's coming off surgery. And so what you do is you plan. You don't plan for your best-case scenario. You plan for your worst-case scenario, and then all the chips fall where they may. And there's really never been a time that I can ever remember that there was a all-star caliber player sitting on the bench because, gosh darn it, there just aren't enough at-bats for them. These things always seem to shake out. So what the Angels have done is prepare for what could happen, which is that Crone and Pujols might not be all there come opening day and through April, possibly May. And this is a good plan B and C, correct?
Yeah, and I think it also reflects that good general managers, good organizations, they covet every roster spot, every last one. I used to be marvel at NFL general managers that would bring 100 players in, and they would tell you, you know, you can only keep 50-something, and they would say, we're going to use them all before the year's done. And that's what the Angels have done. They said, okay, we like C.J. Crone, and we like Yunel Escobar, and we think Albert's going to be okay, but for this money, we're going to get a productive guy. And it's not just getting a guy. They intend for him to play, and it gives him a fallback position for 2018 to be their starting third baseman. Crone's interesting. C.J. Crone is 27 years old, and he's coming off his best year, but it was 792 OPS. he had 16 homers. And he's got a – but – and here's the other thing. C.J. Cron has a minor league option, and as Billy Epler said, this just gives us roster flexibility. We now have a surplus. Does this mean they're going to go out and trade for somebody? I don't think it means that, but I think it, with so much uncertainty regarding Matt Shoemaker and Skaggs and Garrett Richards, and also the back three guys at the back of the bullpen, including closer Houston Street, are all coming off surgery. So, you know, the more you had a chance to add a good player at a reasonable price, and that's what you do. You do it, like you said.
So they signed Cole Calhoun to a 3-year extension. You know, I mean, when you see this stuff, I mean, you realize, like, the Angels, who everyone is not regarding, and we've talked about the fact that, I don't know, Fangraphs thinks that they're going to be good. Nobody else does. They're not in any kind of rebuilding mode. They are assuming their pitchers are going to be healthy, and they are moving forward. And they really have kind of bought Calhoun, if I'm not mistaken, just out of his arbitration years, right?
And one free agent year, I think. And what it's done is they've now secured three position players under 30 through contracts through at least 2020. And then that's what good organizations do, right? They got a little stability. So they now have Calhoun, Simmons, and Mike Trout signed up through at least 2020. And they're going to be paid, I think, $73 million this year. And then Albert makes $29 million. But you just start, I think this is what you do. You start looking at who are your core guys that you can build, move forward with. And Valbuena, 31 years old, and he gets a let's just be optimistic and call it a 3-year deal. So now you got a core to build around. And that's been a problem for the Angels the last couple of years. Their farm system is not good. That's job one for Billy Epler. So you got to, when you have young guys that can play, you got to make sure you lock them up for a while. And you know, one of the things Calhoun said, and you and I have seen guys that say, no, I'm going to play this out and see what my market value is on free agency. Not always a good move to do that. But one of the things Calhoun said is, where could I be better than this? Where would I be that is a better place to play, a better place to live? Could I find a better manager than Mike Socia, or an owner more committed to winning than Artie Moreno? There's no reason for me not. Oh, and by the way, he did mention this. I get to play next to the best player on baseball for the next 3 or 4 years. I think that's pretty good for me.
No doubt about it. Let's not forget about that guy. Okay, so on the opposite end of the spectrum, they did make a small signing, but we want to talk about that. So Eric Young Jr. agreed to a minor league deal. He has a major league invite to spring training. So obviously his speed, he can play all three outfield positions. Is this his ticket to get back to the majors?
I hope so. He spent, I think he spent all of last season in AAA.
Yes.
He's only had, nine at-bats the last 2 years. And you're right. I would think Eric Young Jr. looked at this. He's one of those guys that when you have him on your team, he ends up being more valuable than you think he is. He can do everything. He can play every position in the outfield. He can pinch run. He has been a pinch hitter for most of his career. And, you know, is a guy that accepts that role, is accepting of that role. And so he gives you depth everywhere. And you know, Socia, he's a guy that likes to run, likes to force the action, especially late in games. You can see, it feels like Mike Socia's fingerprints are all over this. He's a guy that, Eric Young is a guy that Mike Socia would turn into a weapon. He's 31 years old. And you know that both these guys, that one of the selling points for the Angels is, this is your best chance to play in the big leagues. We're not rebuilding. We're here. We intend to contend, and we think there would be a role for you.
Okay, interesting stuff. Richard, as always, thank you very much. Talk to you next time. The Mariners had a really nice, exciting announcement recently that they're going to honor one of their greatest players in franchise history. Talk to Greg Johns about that. I'm Allison Footer. Greg, before we get to that, though, I want to ask you one question about the current roster, and that is Ariel Miranda. Is his role, what is his role coming up in 2017? Will he maybe be stretched out in spring training so he could be called upon to start? How do the Mariners view him?
Yeah, Ariel Miranda definitely is the number six starter going into spring, which is something you like to have with any major league staff, because the chances of five guys going healthy through spring, let alone a full season, is rare indeed. So Miranda comes as kind of a nice luxury after they added Drew Smyly and Ivana Gallardo to give them a a sixth arm now, and they've got some other guys, Chris Heston, Rob Whalen, some other guys that will be also stretched out this spring. But Miranda definitely will work as a starter in camp, and get his arms stretched out. For one thing, Felix Hernandez is going to WBC, so there'll be a few starts in there anyway that they'll need another arm. But Miranda's a guy that pitched well for them when they picked him up at the end of last year, and they liked what he brought, and they like having that depth. Whether he goes to Tacoma, if he doesn't make the rotation and is waiting there a call away as a starter, or whether he fits into that bullpen as a strong lefty that they had last year, Mike Montgomery in that role, and it worked out very well. A guy that can give him some length and also be used as a lefty. Montgomery is very good, and they see Miranda that same kind of potential. So he could go either way. It'll be an interesting spring for Miranda, but definitely be in the mix with the starters as they go through camp, and then they'll see where he falls once they cut down to 25.
Yeah, and it can't hurt, right? So it's the opposite. Like if you need all of a sudden you need a starter, and then a guy's not stretched out, so there's no harm in having him kind of be. They always start. I mean, every team starts spring training with many more than five starters that kind of go through the schedule, the exhibition schedule. So it's no harm, no foul, right? So at the end of the spring training, he'd just be a bullpen guy.
Yeah, no doubt it's easier to go from being stretched out to pitching in relief than it is going the other direction. And he is a guy who's been a starter through most of his career, that's kind of a natural role for him. But they do like his versatility and what he could bring. So yeah, he's one to watch. And you like that depth. It's one of the things that DePoto was looking for, is to give more depth, more options in that rotation. And he certainly is one of those guys.
Okay, so we're going to move on to something that just makes us all smile, and that is that the Mariners have officially announced they're going to retire Edgar Martinez's number later on in the summer. So, first of all, tell us just like what that was like covering that. I mean, he's a great guy. Everybody likes him a lot. And he's been in the organization for such a long time. I don't know that I really realized that until I started looking at some of these numbers. He is a Mariners lifer.
As Jay Buhner says, Edgar bleeds Mariner blue, and it's funny. You retire a number, usually that thing goes up on the wall, and nobody else wears it. Well, here's a case where they retire a number, and Edgar's still going to be wearing it. It's their hitting coach, so it's kind of funny that way. No one else will ever wear it, but Edgar's going to keep wearing that thing. As he said, the plan is to keep putting on that uniform as long as he can. He really enjoys the role of hitting coach, and that speaks volumes about Edgar Martinez. I mean, nearly every star of his caliber, when they retire, they don't want to get into coaching because of the hours and the time commitment, the travel, and all those things. Those jobs don't pay like you make when you're playing. It's a tough gig. And Edgar loves the game enough that he wanted to get back into it. And when his kids got a little older and he felt the itch and came up, he started helping out with some things, and when the hitting coach was needed, they called on Edgar, and he jumped into it, and he really enjoys it and sees himself doing that for the foreseeable future. So yeah, here's a guy who loves hitting, and certainly Mariner hitters love talking hitting with Edgar. He is a Mariner as can be. Edgar Martinez way outside Safeco Field, there's Edgar's Cantina down the left field line where you can buy a drink and some food during the game, and now Edgar's number will be hanging up next to Ken Griffey Jr.'s on the center field facade at Safeco Field. So certainly a fun day, and as you say, everybody loves Edgar, one of the most humble guys in any walk of life, and pretty fun to see those kind of a person of that caliber, I think, honored in such a way is pretty cool.
Very cool. It's going to take place on August 12th. So the Mariners are celebrating their 40th anniversary as the Mariners, right, this season?
Yes, which is
okay.
Interesting. It's their 41st year, so that's with a wedding anniversary or whatever. You don't do your first anniversary till the end of that year, so technically their 41st year, which people get confused on, but it is their what they're calling the 40th anniversary season.
Okay. The Astros used to milk that stuff. They'd have like their 25th, 30th anniversary. Then they'd have their 35th year. They did all kinds of things to sell out the ballpark. So, and it worked very well. Okay, so 40th anniversary And I, my point being, so Edgar is 54 years old. He has been a part of the organization for 36 years. He played like 19 years or 18 years and been in the organization. So really, are we talking like all but 4 years that this guy has actually been a part of the Mariners organization in some capacity? Of,
yeah.
So all but 4 years of the existence of the Mariners?
I'd have to do the math. He signed in 1982.
Wow.
The franchise came into existence in 76, I believe. So
okay.
There was a few years after, you know, he retired from playing when he was not an active member of the organization. He, you know, when he first retired, you know, he went into private business for himself, was doing a few different things. I remember he was literally, I think, trying to find things to do. I remember he was taking flying lessons, doing all kinds of things to keep himself busy. That was just kind of Edgar. And, you know, so it wasn't until he, you know, came back as hitting coach a year and a half ago that he kind of jumped back into it officially with the Mariners. So, you know, but yes, 36 years since he first signed with the team. It's a teenager out of Puerto Rico, and I was talking to him about that yesterday. He well remembers flying into SeaTac Airport the first time, not speaking much English at all, getting on a bus and with a bunch of about six or seven other guys that he didn't know at a lick, getting on a bus up to Bellingham, Washington, to take on a sport that he loved, but in a land that he didn't know much about. So I didn't know much about the Mariners. Said, you know, he grew up, you know, watching the Yankees and on TV down in Puerto Rico, and you know, didn't know much about Seattle at all. So kind of funny how far he's come and now such an integral part of this community.
That is amazing. Just because he's only 54 years old. So, I mean, we're talking about a relatively young person who has, you know, has been a part of this organization for almost the entire time it's in existence. It just doesn't seem like he's old enough to have that have that distinction, but good for him. And the other thing I want to ask you about, and I think we talked about this when Griffey was elected to the Hall of Fame and when they retired his number, but we're going to go over it again. The Mariners are very stringent on the retired numbers. And so now it will be Griffey, Jackie Robinson, and Edgar Martinez, and that is the end of it. So they have rules in place about what makes you eligible to have your number retired, correct? And can you tell us what those rules are?
Yeah, and the reason they do is, I mean, they want to make it an exclusive club. You know, they have the Mariners Hall of Fame, and there's, you know, eight or nine guys in that. You know, your Jamie Moyers, your Jay Buhners, you know, Lou Piniella, you know, such and such. Edgar is in that, as is Griffey. But to retire a number, they kind of want that to be a rare thing. They don't. You know, and I think that's a good decision. To retire a number is kind of the ultimate honor. And their rules are basically you're either a Hall of Famer who played five or more years with the Mariners, or you're a person close to the Hall of Fame, came close to Hall of Fame induction, and played pretty much your whole career in a Mariners uniform, which Edgar fits pretty nicely into the category B there. And they hope he gets into the Hall of Fame here in the next 2 years, as he appears close to be doing. He made a pretty good jump this year, and to get up to 58%, knocking on that door to get to 75. So we'll see where that goes. But, you know, that's their rules. There's not a lot of guys that fall into that. I think Itro obviously will be a candidate. I think Randy Johnson, certainly a candidate, fits those rules. And interestingly, Randy and Itro both wore the same number 51. So how that works, you know, how you retire number 51 when it comes time will be a choice this franchise will have to make, and something we'll have to watch. You know, two of the greatest players in Mariner history and two Hall of Famers, without a doubt, you know, wearing that same number for Seattle.
Yeah, so that's a good segue to my final topic that I want to talk to you about. I had a chuckle. So all 30 beat writers for our MLB.com reporters, they were tasked with coming up with the best free agent signing in franchise history. So everybody had a story on the best free agent signing in their franchise history. And I laughed because I'm sure that you probably thought this might be the easiest assignment that I will ever have. In terms of having to write a story about the Mariners, because there really is no question that it is Ichiro, and I'm sure you didn't have to spend a whole lot of time digging through the numbers to come up with that.
I did not. Once, I'll be honest, I had to get clarification. You know, when they always said the best free agent, is that okay to, are we including international free agents? Because Ichiro, you know, wasn't playing for another major league team in Simon Seattle. He was in Japan.
True.
In Seattle. So I did have to ask if that was, you know, what they deemed, you know, in the definition of what they were looking for, and it was, you know, they, you know, said you know, he was available to all 30 teams. Obviously, Seattle won the posting bid back in the day to with his team in Japan, and then to get the right to negotiate with him and then sign him. So easily the best free agent signing if you define it that way. And I guess the only guy really close, you know, would be Robinson Cano, but doesn't have the time in yet that Ichiro does. So he's going to have to play a long time in Seattle to match the kind of career Ichiro put up with, you know, 10 consecutive gold gloves, 10 consecutive All-Star appearances, and the impact he had on the game and Seattle. So, yeah, pretty good, pretty solid pick, Ichiro. And he's going to be coming back to Seattle here with the Marlins this coming season. So that will be quite a date as well when Ichiro checks back into Safeco Field.
Oh, that'll be a lot of fun, and it'll be fun for the fans to see him. And someday they will salute him as a Hall of Famer, so we'll wait for that. Okay, Greg, thank you so much. Appreciate your time. Talk to you soon.
You bet, Austin. Good talking to you.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.